You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, April 15th, 2009. This is episode number 67, Geeking Out in Sally's Kitchen. It's that time again, time for the Wells Tech Podcast, and we are basking in the Easter glow of another Lenten season behind us and another celebration of the empty tomb, and we're glad that all of you are listening once again. Thanks again for tuning in, and as usual, I have with me Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Martin, happy Easter, and I guess we could say happy Income Tax Day today, too.
That's right. April 15th is the day, so if you've got your taxes done, good for you. You probably can breathe a sigh of relief. If you've filed the dreaded extension, then it's going to hang over your head for a few more months.
Yeah, we always celebrated big in my family on this day for a couple of reasons. Income Tax Day is also my dad's birthday, and he spent his life as an accountant.
Ah,
too ironic.
What else?
But, yeah. But he's celebrating today, one of our biggest Wells Tech fans, and I wanted to give a little shout out to him on his 83rd birthday. Happy birthday, Daddy.
Happy birthday, yes. All right. As promised, we are going to begin or continue our conversation of Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. And the chapter that we're on, those of you following along at home, is Chapter 5, Personal Motivation Meets Collaborative Production. Big, fancy title for a pretty simple but interesting concept called a wiki. What's a wiki, Sally?
Well, wiki is actually a Hawaiian term that means quick, and basically it is a way to have multiple people edit a website very quickly and easily. Mm-hmm. Probably a good example to hold up to our listening audience is our Wells Tech Wiki. We have a wiki in place at wellstechwiki.wells.net that we've been talking about over the last year and a half of doing this show. And it's just a way for us to work together and pool our knowledge in a common location. So it's not just up to me to push out the message, but it's up to all of us to work together and build the content there on that wiki space.
Yep, a user-editable website is the term that's used by Clay Shirky in the book. He talks a little bit about the history of a wiki. It goes back to 1995, and many people think that the first wiki was Wikipedia, but that's really not true. Wikipedia was a concept that kind of made it popular, but there was something that preceded Wikipedia, which is kind of an interesting story, called Newpedia. And that was a failed model where they were trying to create an online encyclopedia with similar technology, but they had all kinds of rules and regulations similar to the written encyclopedia where there's a vetting process and there's an editorial team and there's only selected authors who can contribute to it. And they were creating a great product, but there was a high standard of quality, but also a very slow rate of progress because it took a long time to go through all of those steps before something could be blessed that it would go out to the masses.
Yeah, I think you and I both actually pulled out the same quote from the book that they were being so careful because they wanted it to all be correct. And what flipped the view of it was that opening it up to anyone editing and assuming that the new errors introduced are going to be less frequent than the existing ones, then the people will correct the existing errors.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you end up with a good product because there's always a checks and balances system in place. People are able to go back and edit, incorrect content to correct it. And, I was thinking about any kind of project I've ever worked on. It's a lot easier to change something someone else has created than it is to start it from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people can just get the ball rolling with any topic in a wiki, basically it's easy for other people to go back and either correct the spelling or add their 2 cents worth, you know, in whatever way, maybe make it easier to understand or whatever edits they want to make on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one of the interesting quotes, and whenever anybody talks about Wikipedia, they worry about, especially in educational circles or academic circles, about the quality or the reliability of an entry. And the wiki model has kind of proven itself, and we've talked about this in the past, how reliable it really is, even compared to published encyclopedias, where the error count is actually less by volume in Wikipedia than it is in a traditional, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever. The quote that I kind of gravitated toward was really the model. They said, rather than filtering contributions before they appear in public, Wikipedia assumes that new errors will be introduced less frequently than existing ones will be corrected. So it's self-balancing. There's enough people interested in a particular topic to ensure quality.
That's right. And, you know, they're interested for a couple of different reasons.
Right.
Some of them just want to kind of make their mark on the world. Some of them have really good stuff to contribute and they want to make sure that it's correct. Some of them just want to, you know, exercise their mental capabilities. They just want to go out there and have a challenge and feel that comfort that they've, you know, contributed in some way.
Yep, absolutely. They talk about the long tail, and we're going to talk a lot about that, but that's a pretty popular concept or approach to thinking about this contributory approach to developing anything online, where there's a pretty steep arc of people who contribute to a particular wiki, and our Wells Tech wiki is no different. Sally and I are by far the greatest contributors to it, but that's okay. There are other people who have just dabbled in a little bit, added an article here or there. So it's kind of the 80-20 principle. 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people, and that's okay. It's Clay Shirky points out that most contributors, by definition, to Wikipedia are lazy. They maybe only make one or two entries, and that's okay, as long as there's enough people enough of that 20% doing 80% of the work that are knowledgeable about it and care enough to keep the thing going.
So, Martin, I don't know if you're a Wikipedia contributor or not. As of yesterday, I am. I went out and made one edit in Wikipedia so I could be part of that long tail. I found the Sleepy Eye webpage, Sleepy Eye Minnesota, and I added a link to our church and school there. So maybe that's something our listeners can go out and contribute to Wikipedia as well.
Oh, yeah. I did the same thing. I saw your note in the mind map, and I've contributed to Wikipedia before. I've done a little bit of editing on the Wells page. Maybe you weren't aware of that, but Wells does have a Wikipedia page. I'd say it's pretty close to accurate. And the beauty of it is if you don't think it's accurate, go and change it. Depending on the amount of interest in the page, the change may stick or it may not. But that's part of the process, I guess. So I went to Hartford, Wisconsin's page, and to see if I could add an entry for our church or our school. And there was a section in there under education, and there was a simple sentence that said, several private parochial schools serve students of all ages. And I just added a simple sentence, one such Lutheran elementary school with approximately 200 students enrolled is Peace Lutheran School, and provided a link to this school. So we'll see if that sticks. It stuck for a day, so we will find out if it stays. I guess it really depends on who's most interested in that and what their objectives are. But I think it's open to anybody.
And certainly that's another way that we can let our light shine and reach out, you know, to someone visiting that web page to link them up to the ministry efforts that we have in our local schools and congregations.
So I guess the big question, Sally, is there a ministry application here? Is there stuff here, you know, on a wiki and this this power law distribution or this long tail that we're talking about where people can come together and some people contribute more and some people contribute less. Is there benefit or blessing that can be taken from that for a congregation or school?
Well, you know, I think the big thing is, are there things that we collaborate on.
Right.
Because that's what a wiki is good for. I even have a link to Wikis in Plain English, a little video that explains that about wikis that I'll include in the show notes. I was just sitting in a ladies' meeting last week, and we were working on several different projects, you know, planning a church picnic, planning our Advent by Candlelight dinner that's going to come up before we know it at the end of this year. And I said, you know, this would be a great application for a wiki tool where we can all go out and post whatever notes we've made on our collaborative efforts there. So
did they all roll their eyes and say, that's Sally again?
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, they did. No. But I've had three people join our wiki. We have a really small ladies group, but that's, you know, kind of a demonstration of the long tail. I've at least got some people that have gone out and joined, added to the discussion topic, and, you know, if nothing else, it's a great place for us to document our work. And even if it is just one or two or three people that are going to actually maintain the site, I think there'll be more that are looking there for the information that we've archived there.
Well, I think that you hit on the you know, kind of the sweet spot for me. Documented. Now it's in the public record. It's there for people to see, and even if somebody never contributes to it, they can go back and if you've done it right, review it. I think a lot of the things that we do in church, in our churches, in our schools, is just, you have a meeting and you talk about things, mm-hmm. but you never really get down to formalizing it and saying, you know, this is what we're doing, and this is how we're doing it, and why we're doing it, and that's what a wiki could be good for. I view a couple of things that I would think would be optimal for this, and similar to what you described there on the ladies' side, is our congregation recently went through finishing up an operations manual where we describe what every area of ministry does, down from the job description to objectives to whatever. That's obviously a perfect application for a wiki because each area can go in there and edit their own section, read other sections, comment on other sections of the operations manual, and then it becomes part of that public record. The alternative to that is somebody with a master document that sends out requests for information, or they send out the document via attachment, of course, and they say, well, edit your part and I'll put it all together. Why do we need to do that if the person who cares the most about a particular section can go right in and edit themselves on a wiki? Then it's done right there for you in real time.
Yeah, I think you got to watch that video I'm going to have a link to if you're dealing with exactly that problem, because email is just not built for collaboration. Things get really muddled really quickly when four different people edit the same document and they then manually have to be combined into one or something like that. So you're definitely going to want to avoid, you know, that email trap, basically.
Yep. So I think there's lots of things, and I think of many of the things in a school setting. Schools are really optimal as far as using a technology like this where you're collaborating and students are coming together, building things together. Wikis are a custom fit for this, or perfect fit for that.
Maybe even groups of pastors or teachers that need to work together. Maybe your district adult discipleship committee needs to have a space to share information or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just one, you know, specific example. But any group that you're a part of that wants to share and collaborate on information, I think a wiki is the perfect tool for that.
Yep. Any group, which is more than one person, I think would be a good candidate for wiki-type technology. And most of the wiki services that are out there are just really easy to use. I know this, the one that we use for WellsTech Wiki, Wet Paint, you have this big edit button and you type and then you click save. I mean, it's a three-step process, right? It can't get any easier than that.
Yeah, not intimidating at all, you know. And another thing that you can do is even with the free tools that are out there, like Wet Paint, you can customize it. We were just talking about how we've edited the WellsTech Wiki now, Martin. You put some graphic design spin on the WellsTech Wiki, so now it actually has the WellsTech logo on it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that just adds to the comfort level of your group if you can, you know, make it look like a place that's not intimidating and it has a big easy edit button. You know, who would not want to push that button and make some changes to that site? Imagine.
Maybe you should label it, don't push this button, and then people would push the button.
There you go.
But that's as easy as it gets. And there, if you're interested in developing wikis, it's very easy to do and very free. We've talked about some of these in the past, and we'll put a link in the show notes to the past discussion we had on wikis. But a couple that come to mind are PBWiki and Wikispaces. Those are both free. And, of course, WetPaint, we would highly recommend. For the free ones, you typically have advertising that goes along with it, but for a smaller fee, you can get that out of there. And we may eventually go that way with our Wellstack Wiki if it gets popular. Sally, you did a little bit of analysis on what we're doing on our how many people are on our WetPaint Wiki, right?
Yeah, after reading this chapter, I just couldn't resist checking out to see if we have a long tail or not.
And we do, right?
Yeah, we do. We have 29 members, and I think there were like 319 page edits mm-hmm. that have happened on the site, and 73% of those, so there's the 80-20 rule roughly, were done by you and me, Martin. Mm-hmm. But then we had, you know, a fair amount of people that did 17, 10, 4 or 5 mm-hmm. entries, you know, on the website. So definitely the long tail in place. Certainly the vast majority of people have only made one edit, which was basically creating their account so that they're a part of the site. But we invite you to edit more.
I'm excited about that wiki. It's growing, and I think there's a lot of good resources. More and more I'm referring people to it. I get a lot of calls on and emails about a lot of the things that we talk about on this show. And for the record, it's good to get that stuff up there where people can read it and add to it or edit it. And that's kind of the beauty of Wiki.
That's right. And, you know, we have that extra component now. We have, what, with this show, 67 podcasts in the can that mm-hmm. we can embed in that Wiki as well. You know, links to different discussions, like discussions about wikis or about church media or whatever the topic might be of the week. So, you know, having that archive content is a very, very powerful tool. And I think the same would be true for our ladies' circle or for your operations manual or for whatever the project might be within the local congregation. I know just this past week we were looking back at photos of how the church was decorated a year ago for Easter because, you know, having that archive content is very, very powerful and being able to reference it there and know that it's there in a secure place where you can get to it next year when you need it is a great thing.
Beautiful. So let's move on. We have a wonderful interview. It's actually a two-parter with Mike Wessendorf, who is a Wells musician, independent artist, and that was one of the reasons that we wanted to talk with Mike. He's not under a label per se, but he's basically gone out on his own and published his own music. He is right here in Milwaukee. He is a regular participant at the Point of Grace, which is the campus ministry center at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He's also a weatherman, so kind of an interesting guy and a very interesting interview. I think you'll enjoy it. So let's listen to our conversation with Mike Wessendorf. We have Mike Wessendorf joining us today on the WellsTech Podcast. Welcome, Mike. Thank you so much for joining.
Well, thanks for having me.
We've been wanting to have some of our musicians, Wells musicians on. We always play their music, you know, at the end of the show. We kind of relegate them to the last 5 minutes. And in fact, last week we played one of your songs. I think we played, I've got to look back, Climb, I think it was, from your Run Boy Run album. And we really enjoy your music. And we understand that you have just recently released a new album. And one of the neat things about your music is you are a total independent. Is that right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
What does that mean to be an independent musician? Tell us a little bit about you and how you kind of work in that space as an independent.
Well, the idea is that the two ways to look at artists or artist ministries are there are the label artists and then there's the independent artists. The label artists are the ones that typically you're going to hear on radio. It's the label industry that is the music industry. So when you read of all these gloom and dooms about the music industry, you're talking really about the labels that are really struggling in this new music economy. And independents have long been kind of viewed as the amateurs, if you will, or it's the place after you're a label artist and you're too old for the imagery of the mainstream music,
right,
that you get relegated to being an independent.
And right.
It's taken on a whole new meaning. There's slogans out there that indie is trendy. And even the major labels have splintered, and they have put together independent labels, which are really the same thing. You're just using the phrase independent, because in a lot of the music consumer's mind today, especially with the internet and how that music spreads now, there's a lot of underground building of your fan base. And so even the labels have understood that to have the indie label right now is a fairly good thing to have, because you're viewed as somebody who's not caught in with the machine,
mm-hmm,
if you will.
Okay.
So
let's take a step back. You are a Wells member, and you live here in Milwaukee, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yep.
And you have a day job as well?
I've got three jobs.
Or night job, or whatever it is. Yeah, tell us how it mixes all together.
the first job, my main job is I'm a meteorologist with the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee. I run and oversee an operation. It's a 24/7 weather forecasting operation called Innovative Weather. We have a number of major clients, including groups like We Energies and Alliant Energy and WUWM. You can hear our forecasts on 89.7 and so we've got a couple of radio stations and a host of other smaller clients as well, including the Lake Express, the lake forecast that we make for them. And so what we do is we hire out our students who are on their way to becoming meteorologists. Many of them already are, and they're working toward their master's degree. And so my job is to oversee that, the training of it, the development of the program, the development of the clients, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of my life. The other one is I'm the director of music at our college campus ministry in Milwaukee, which is called the Point of Grace.
Right.
Something that needs your prayers, mm-hmm, quite honestly. And we're going through a restructuring time in the financial difficulties that are here. We're finding that we have to rebuild that fiscal part of the ministry, and so we've come up with some great blessings and some great challenges, and so we would definitely appreciate your prayers in that. But
absolutely.
The Point of Grace is at tpog.net if you wanted to learn more about that.
Yeah, my son is a student there and really enjoys Point of Grace just immensely.
Yeah,
it's been a real blessing to him.
I'll pick on him from time to time. Hey, Aaron, I got something for you to sing. What do you think? okay.
It's great. He needs an outlet for that beautiful voice. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other part of my job now is as what I would call a musicianary. I've always liked that term. I'm a Christian recording artist, and I have a heart for the people of God, and I really do believe that at this time that what we have in the Wells to offer is important. And while I'm in contemporary Christian music, I also do classical music. We do in the Lent and the Advent season, we do an hour-long service concert format that focuses on the solos of Handel's Messiah.
Mm.
And so we range from that to acoustic to full-out rock band with the bagpipes.
Wow.
And I do believe in this part of and it's one of the things that's really been on my heart recently is to really not just play music, but to create events, preferably with our Wells churches, so that we can really serve our communities through the message of Share the Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that you'll see coming from me here in the next few months as I try to articulate what I envision in that. And so I'm able to use the gifts that God's given me and be able to be out and reach maybe to a different audience that we don't always do. And, you know, music is, it's boundless and it's eternal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It touches so many different people. And, you know, in our Lutheran circles, a lot of times, you know, we're born into the faith in our baptism. But as you get outside that, you find out that there are many people who have struggled. And the first experience that they had with a God who loves them is through the music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why our you know, things like hymns and things like contemporary music are all very important in reaching people with the hope that we have in Jesus. So that's my third job, and that takes me keeps me pretty busy as well.
So you have three albums out, correct? Is that right, Mike?
I now have,
or is it more?
five.
Five. Wow. Yeah,
yes, the most recent one last year was a new one, and if you guys don't have it, I'll have to get you a copy. It's called Color Through the Gray.
Mm, okay, right.
It's an acoustic vocal album. We decided to take all acoustic guitars, and I wanted to make something that was accessible from the young all the way to the old, older audiences, so that it was something that musically would bridge, and vocally and with the words would also be rich with meaning. And the Color Through the Gray thing is kind of a God thing, the way that all the songs fell into place. So that's that one, and then we did a version of our He Is Worthy, the classical music one, because we had a number of requests for that, so we went into the studio last year and did that, and I just got back from Nashville, and we are working on a three-single EP that will come out probably in conjunction with the Share the Hope idea, but that'll come out sometime this summer.
So as an independent, and you don't have a record label behind you, how do you produce your music? Where do you get your funding from? I'm sure there are listeners to the podcast who are maybe thinking about that and thinking, boy, I can't afford to do that, or I don't know how to do that.
It's let's take it from two different angles. I'll take it from my experience, and then I'll talk about what if you're just starting out wondering how you get to this point.
That'd be great.
Because those are kind of loaded questions.
Sure. Well, we love loaded questions on the podcast.
Well, you know, Christian music in today's world can be a loaded question.
Sure.
Especially with the way that the industry is changing. There's a lot to it.
Right.
But I will say this, that the support that I've received has been very crucial. I, in fact, will be spending time trying to articulate this to pastors and churches that I work with, that in order for us to be able to see the music ministry grow, we do need people who will come alongside with us and help support it.
Mm-hmm.
When we do live events, it costs money to get there for all the time and energy and effort and the practice time, and then to be able to help create an event that the church can use as an outreach or whatever the case may be. And in fair market terms, when you get to where I'm at in terms of the experience that I have with this, an event is around $750 to $1,000. That's what the fair market would be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in most cases, churches don't have that kind of capital to be able to invest in something like that. So we work around that, and I've become very flexible to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten here because of the support of our churches and venues who have seen value in what we do and have been willing to produce an honorarium. We do a lot of worship services for free will offerings. So literally, there's hundreds, and 1,000 people who have contributed to this ministry. Everybody who buys a CD has contributed to this ministry, and over time, we're able to save money and take care of musicians. And the musicians that come and go continue to get better, and so it is a costly thing. And that's why when we partner with our churches, we encourage them to see it as more of an investment,
mm-hmm.
in a mission, if you will, because we now stand here able to help you at this level only because of the blessings that God has given us through other people who have invested in us. And
right.
So it's that whole pay it forward kind of thing.
Yeah, so it's not just you.
No.
Right.
And so if you're starting out, it seems like a daunting thing.
Yeah.
And there is a track record, and there's a life cycle for most artists. And honestly, it's one of the neat things about the independent music scene right now. It's also one of the frustrating things, is that there's always seems to be a lot of new artists that are coming out. There aren't a lot of well-established artists. And part of that, it goes kind of two ways. A lot of times, as I've gone through different circles, understand I talk to artists who are not only just a part of our church body, but part of many other churches, and you get a sense for what's happening in the overall heart of a Christian musician. And a lot of times when you start out, God's given you a skill, and you want to use it, and so you write a few songs, you go in your basement, you record, and that's one of the good things and bad things about the industry now and the technology that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can record.
Right.
And unfortunately, not a lot of people, especially early on, I didn't know what it really means to be a Christian artist in a musicianary.
Mm-hmm.
Because you spend the first couple years trying to let everybody know about you, and so your focus is on everything that you are doing. And usually over time you finally arrive at a place where you hit a wall for two reasons: your pride, and right. God has to deal with that, and usually it's not a it's both and it's both your pride and your lack of support.
Mm-hmm.
Most independent Christian musicians do not have a very good support network. They're young and they're not very good at first, and in Christian we don't deal with telling people the truth sometimes very well. It's all like, oh, that sounded great. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't. And there's some things, but nobody knows how to help them.
Right.
So we just kind of say, well, that was okay. Thanks for coming. And then you never ask them back because you're like, oh, that didn't go so well.
Right.
And so you're kind of struggling with this. Nobody's supporting me, yet I'm also feeling guilty about this because I'm not sure what I'm doing. And there aren't a lot of artists, and that's the last part of it, the third leg to problems and difficulties in starting out, is that there's not a lot of mentors, in part because the pride sneaks back in and you see the next kid coming up as competition.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of seeing it as an opportunity to spread what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself in the unique position that I love educating and coaching and things like that, and I also love what we do in here. And so I'm hopeful that, especially in our church body where there are so few, you know, Christian artists who are writing and doing what I do, that we are able to start identifying them, and that, you know, I can share with them some of the things that I've learned the hard way,
mm-hmm.
But also the good way, you know, and hopefully get them through those first 2 years so that they have the faith and the support, both spiritual and physical and monetary support, to continue to get better at their craft and do it for the right reasons,
right.
If you will.
So, Mike, I'm guessing that one of those aspects that you need to develop is the technical side, all of the knowledge needed to market yourself on this Web 2.0 world that we're living in,
yeah.
The digital age. And, you know, I've visited your website, MikeWestendorf.com, and I see that you have a little tag there that says you're on Facebook and Twitter. So mm-hmm. You're beginning to make use of some of those different channels to get the word out. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot out there, and the biggest frustration is it changes so quickly. You know, like, Twitter's the in thing for now. In 6 months, it may be something else. I think Twitter and Facebook and the MySpace, they stick around because they were the originals. There's now going to be a whole host of copycats that are going to come out, and they always do. And you kind of have to pick your battles, so mm-hmm. to speak. And I personally don't like MySpace because of how rampant they've let their advertising go. I mean, it's important, I think, for us not to condemn Christians for being on MySpace if they're doing their best to let their light shine. But one of the things I've learned about social networking is that as a Christian, if you want to use it in the best way, you really have to work it for the right reasons. Otherwise, there's too much junk sitting on some of them. And the MySpace is probably the best example of, there's a lot of temptation there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so how can you really do it, but do it better? But yes, the technology continues to change, and in fact, in the music industry, I just got back from the CIA summit, which is the Christian Independent Alliance summit. So a lot of independent musicians, and we're listening to industry experts and panels, and having an opportunity to ask questions. And you know, their thing is that we are going back to an age of back in the 50s and 60s when the single was king. It was not about groups, it was about the song. And the distribution channel, because of the internet, has now changed. It used to be that you needed a record deal because
mm-hmm.
the only place you could get it was in a record store. Well, that is no longer the case anymore, obviously. And so you need to build an online community, so to speak. And probably the best piece of advice I got was from a good friend. Some people in Milwaukee will remember Josh Lorich. He was a DJ at The Fish when The Fish was still here, before K-Love bought him out.
Mm-hmm.
Josh produced my first studio effort, and he is now what's his title? He does radio promotion for EMI, the Christian Music Distribution Group. And so Chris Tomlin and David Crowder Toby Mac, these guys are all people that he calls radio stations to see how they're tracking and how the songs are doing. Josh is a big technology guy, and his comment to me was, in this day and age, the temptation and the strategy has been make your website all about you. Mm-hmm. This is where you come to learn about me. Me, the artist. Look at my pictures, look at this, and this is what I'm thinking. Now, what you really want to do is turn that around and say, make it about your fans. Make it about them. Serve them through your website. So you're looking now for ways to give yourself away rather than say, look at me.
Right.
And that's how these tools, like the Facebooks and the Twitters, become important, because it does help you get in front of people. But if you do it well, it's how can I serve you? How can I make you think? How can I...
Sure. You know, it's a strange marriage, isn't it? Because Facebook and especially Twitter, those are, they're very narcissistic, or can be, you know, very centered on the me. And so, how do you turn that around? When you Twitter, what do you Twitter?
I'm still getting used to Twitter, but what I like about it, and the thing that people like about it, is that in this fast-paced world, and most people have probably learned this the hard way in email. You know, you put your heart and soul into this 5-paragraph email, and you lay out all the thoughts, and they're well thought out, and the person reading it gets to about the second sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
And stops reading, and then says, you're a moron. You know? And you're like, but did you read it? And they're like, yeah, I read it, and they didn't. It speaks to two things. The attention span of Americans
is about 140 characters right now, isn't it? 140
characters. And it'll probably get shorter.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But that it is nice, because one of the things that sometimes we as Christians do is we try to have a conversation, and we get really deep, and we are not speaking the language of the people. Mm-hmm. Can you make your point in 140 characters or less? And what you find is you can, but you have to think about words. It's the economy of words. And so in some respects, it can be a good thing, because it makes you think and consider, what am I really trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Because how many conversations do we get into, probably like this one, that should have ended 10 minutes ago?
Right.
You know? It just keeps going.
Sally, what Mike is doing in the independent space was probably not possible 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, just the idea of talking to a Christian artist and how does that tie into technology, it ties in really strongly.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So exciting to see, you know, how he has a global audience through his website and the different things that he's doing.
Yep.
With his music.
Next week, we're going to hear a little bit more from Mike, and really... he'll drive home for us, and it was kind of a great little segue into the purpose. You know, why is he doing this? And a very passionate guy, and you know he loves his Savior, and I think you'll enjoy part two as well. So tune in next week for part two of our interview with Mike Westendorf. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time and interviewing with us. Up next is our new technology showcase, a rather new feature to the Wells Tech podcast, where we take a look at what's going on in the world of technology that we can bring to your attention that may have some ministry purposes. And one thing that we wanted to highlight this week is, again, another social network. It seems like we talk a lot about social networks, but there's probably a reason for that. And no, it's not Twitter, but it's kind of a Twitter, I wouldn't even call it a Twitter clone. It's maybe what Twitter could or should be, at least in my mind, and that's FriendFeed, FriendFeed.com. And they've actually rolled out a beta site, beta.friendfeed.com. FriendFeed's a little difficult to describe. I know, Sally, when you and I were talking about this, I had a little trouble describing for you what exactly it was and how I was using it. But FriendFeed basically aggregates all of your social networks, anything that you're participating in, into a feed that your friends can come to, subscribe to, and see basically what's going on in your life. So, for instance, when you become a friend of somebody on Facebook, you see what they're doing on Facebook. FriendFeed takes Facebook, takes LinkedIn, takes Twitter, takes your blog, takes what you're doing on Flickr, many other social networking sites, and brings them all together into one single feed, so you can kind of see over time what somebody's doing in all of these different areas. So if you go to beta.friendfeed.com/mspriggs, for instance, you would see all of the things that I'm doing. So if you'll go there tomorrow, you'd actually see this podcast show up in that feed, or any blog posts that I had, or any tweets that I pushed out, or any books that I recommended on Goodreads, or any photos that I posted on Flickr. So it's just kind of that central repository, as opposed to having to follow me, or if you're interested in what I have to say on any particular area, or a friend that you have, if you get on FriendFeed, it kind of brings it all together. And this beta site is kind of taking that to the next level, where it's a live scrolling feed. So I've subscribed to probably 10 or 15 friends, and as they're doing things in on the web, it all flows into that feed of sorts, and I can keep track of anything of interest. And one of the neat parts about FriendFeed, unlike Twitter, is that you can comment on different feeds. So the conversation about a particular topic is kind of self-contained against or attached to a particular post or entry.
You know, I could see how that would be useful. I know I've had different tweets out there, and I'll get either an at reply.
And you have no idea what they're talking about, right?
Exactly, a direct message, and there's no context to it. You know, right. What exactly that I said are you commenting on? Hard to make those connections, but mm-hmm. I can definitely see the power in being able to comment right there on a particular topic.
So it'll be real interesting for me to see where FriendFeed is going. FriendFeed is obviously not near as popular as Twitter is. Twitter is everywhere these days. You can't turn on the television, radio, whatever, or listen to a podcast without somebody talking about Twitter. But FriendFeed is, I think, kind of an interesting concept that I hope takes off, because I think it's very useful. So we'll keep an eye on it. And if you want to join, go to friendfeed.com, set up an account, and you can easily do that as well. So I would say, for people wanting to know what I'm talking about, and I try and really focus on technology topics that relate to ministry in almost everything that I do online, that would be a great place to go, friendfeed.com/mspriggs, and you'd see the things related to that I'm thinking about. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick this week? I always ask you that, and you always say yes. I wonder why I do that.
Yeah.
You should shock me one day and say, nope, no pick this week.
Yeah, okay. I'll work on that.
Okay.
All right. My pick this week comes from Common Craft. I mentioned them earlier in the show. They're one of my favorite websites, because I do a lot of training, and they put time into very simple explanations of all kinds of things out on the web, like Twitter or RSS, or earlier we were talking about wikis. They have videos, and their theme of the videos is they're done in plain English. So the one that I wanted to highlight today is called The World Wide Web in Plain English. It's a brand new video from Common Craft, and it includes a short explanation of what makes the World Wide Web work. You know, browsers and packets and server addresses and links and all those kind of things. So a really great tutorial. You might want to show it to your kids in your school to help them understand what's behind the World Wide Web. You might want to show it to other people that are just getting their feet wet with the World Wide Web, and just a good kind of context builder, foundational information to help people understand what's really going on when they type a web address into a browser and that kind of thing. Another interesting twist on this video is I found a version of it on a website that I just became aware of called .sub.com. Have you ever heard of that one, Martin?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's kind of like a YouTube website. It has a lot of videos posted, but the unique thing about .sub.com is that all of them are captioned. And apparently they have the ability, I haven't had time to create an account and give it a try, but once you upload the video, that you can add the captioning there on the site somehow. So I was really excited to find this closed caption version of the World Wide Web in plain English, and a whole bunch more that's closed captioned out on .sub.com. So I'll make
sure
our
friend John Shoesmith would be interested in that.
I emailed him yesterday, so yep, I think he would be. John's our connection, our Wells Tech listener out in Yakima, Washington, who does closed caption videos of sermons, and sent it to him right away.
Okay. Now, .sub would be .dotsub.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then the period, .com. So, .sub.com. And like I said, I'll have a link in the show notes for that as well.
Beautiful. Thank you. My pick is a Windows application, free. It's part of their Live Suite. We've talked a little bit about on the show, a little bit about that on the show in the past. It's called Live Writer, and essentially anybody that blogs, I would highly recommend using this particular tool. It's at writer.live.com, and essentially it's a desktop application that allows you to write blog posts and then publish to your blog, and it supports almost every kind of imaginable blog that you might have. If it's at blogger.com or WordPress or wherever. And it's a nice little application that allows you to write it offline, hit the publish button, and it goes, you know, and publishes it out with the right categories and tags and all that other good stuff. You can save local drafts. You can obviously do all the formatting. And one neat thing is you can see how exactly how it would look with the design applied to it in that blog. So, for instance, we have an imprint blog that has a particular theme to it. I hit a preview button, and I'll see exactly how my blog post would appear with picture and all right within that page without before you even publish it. So you can add pictures. You can add photo albums, tables, maps, tags, videos, all kinds of things. And you can publish to multiple blogs. I publish to three sites, the same blog post each time, one to an internal blog we have here on our Connect site, one to Imprint, and then I have a live blog that's more a little bit more public that people who are just surfing around can maybe stumble upon and get interested in some of the things that I write about. But I think they've done a nice job. You can set a publish date so that you can publish it in the future or publish it tomorrow or the next day, whatever. Just all kinds of features that make it real easy and appealing and kind of, I think, makes the workflow a little bit easier rather than going out to site, logging in, whatever. You don't have to do any logging in. You just, you know, once you set it up, it's ready to go. So Windows Live Writer, anybody that does any kind of blogging, I would highly recommend you check that out, if you're on the Windows platform, of course.
You know, I may have to share that one with my 9-year-old. He just started a blog last week.
Is that right?
He's blogging about Legos. So.
Ah, yeah. What else?
Yeah, exactly.
Something
exactly.
That he knows well. It's good to blog
right.
About things you know.
Right. So maybe he'll be interested, Martin. Thanks for sharing that.
Oh, absolutely. All right, Sally, we want to remind everybody of our contest.
Yeah, that's right, Martin. We are looking for your top 5 software picks, those that you couldn't live without if you were, say, stranded on a desert island.
Desert Island contest.
Anything goes in this one. It can be free software or fee-based software, applications for your desktop or cloud-based applications. You just tell us what your favorites are, and we'll add them to a compiled list and share that on our show coming up at the end of April. So you have until April 26th at midnight to get your picks in, and we really want to hear from you guys. We haven't had a lot of entries, and we think this could be a really powerful list for everyone to share and, you know, be a part of and learn from each other. I've already gotten some that I didn't know about at all, so I know there's great software out there that we can all learn about.
So your chances of winning are great, and Sally, tell them what they win.
Well, they win a $25 gift certificate to our Wells Tech store. You can visit our Wells Tech store at cafepress.com/WellsTech, and we have all kinds of great Wells Tech merchandise for you to take advantage of there. So $25 of spending delight in the Wells Tech store. You definitely
want
that
with
a
Wells
prize.
Tech logo on is yours. That's right.
That's right.
And most things are under $25, so you can get quite a bit.
That's right.
All right, next segment, the ever-popular community feedback. We have a lot of people contributing to the show this week, and we would encourage all of our listeners to consider doing that. I think that's a great part about this show, where we have people talking about the things that are of interest to them, teaching us things. I guess I learn more from the feedback than any other segment of the show, any of the research that we do, because there are a lot of smart people listening to the show who share cool things that they found and things that are applicable to ministry. So send us your feedback.
Yeah, we love to hear from you. A great way for you to do that and actually to have a conversation around the topic is through our Wealth Tech listserv. We have links to that in our show notes website. And this past week, there was some really great conversation there about school software. And I guess it would apply to church office software as well. And basically the question was, should we go with fee-based software or open source software? Should we use Microsoft Office versus Open Office on our servers? Should we use Windows-based servers or Linux-based servers? And I think what was exciting to see is that there's great pros and cons for each.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think you could necessarily go wrong with either direction, fee-based or open source, but you need to just evaluate, you know, where you are and, you know, how much time and money you have to put into the efforts or how much support you might need, you know, external to your organization. And just some awesome posts out on the Wells Tech listserv. I encourage you to go out and
people took a lot of time to craft those and really thoughtful responses. And I think pretty balanced. I think there were some good discussions there about, as you mentioned, the pros and the cons. And not like the it's the office, you know, some call it the office suite wars, because there's some very strong feelings on all sides. But I think the conversation on the listserv was I think really helpful. So I think if you're interested in making that decision, and many schools and churches have to make that decision, that's a great resource now.
That's right. Next up on the list is an email we received from David Schumann. He's at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and he had a really great idea for recycling old computers, basically taking old, less powerful computers and installing the Linux operating system on those to be able to continue to use them, prolong the life of old equipment. And Linux is free, so you really can't go wrong with trying that solution. He likes Fedora 7 for Linux. He says it's very stable, hard to break, and has very few security or virus issues. So he was using an 800 megahertz Pentium 3 with a 20 gig hard drive and only 256 meg of RAM, and has it up and running just fine, and he says speedy enough, you know, very comparable to a 2.5 gigahertz Dell with 512 meg of RAM that's running Windows. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Sally, are you surprised? It seems like a lot of our listeners are very comfortable with Linux. That kind of surprised me at first, that a lot of our people in ministry situations are jumping on the Linux bandwagon.
Well, I think, you know, it's definitely a way to prolong or extend the life of equipment, and very frugal, wise stewardship with the gifts that God has given us. So we're actually running Linux on our servers over at our school, and really happy with it. I just found a free Ubuntu to allow our Windows machines to have Ubuntu applications or Linux applications on them as well. So it offers a lot of, you know, advantages, and it allows you to, you know, tap into another world of software that's available out there that you wouldn't necessarily be able to utilize on a Windows box.
Yep, absolutely. Are you maintaining that, or is that Kevin's job? Or do you have somebody else in the congregation?
Kevin does a lot of the server-based work.
Okay.
Yep, he's the true geek in the family.
All right, but there's an item coming up here that I think you really set yourself above in true geekdom.
Oh yeah,
your DIY
I'm so
project.
Excited. Yes, that was part of our Twitter conversation. Actually, we mentioned it last week that I had found a post, a do-it-yourself post on Lifehacker, where someone had actually mounted an old laptop computer, again prolonging the life of old equipment, mounted it under their kitchen cabinet, and were able to have internet access there and have a kitchen computer, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just couldn't let that one pass by. Happened to have some gifted people with woodworking skills in my family, so they built me a little stand, and we took an old laptop. It was about 5 years old. We actually reinstalled Windows, so we had a, you know, a clean installation on it. And we didn't do it exactly like the Lifehacker hack, but mounted it a little bit differently, didn't require us to flip the monitor a different direction or anything, and so that, you know, cut down on the work that we had to do. It's up and running. We were listening to Pandora Radio in the kitchen this morning. Screensaver is set up as our digital photo album, basically, and we have our iGoogle page set up with our calendar on it, so we don't need a calendar hung on the wall anymore. We have our
calendar
from Google on our our computer, and we are living in geek heaven in our kitchen now.
Now, the picture you shared, Sally, are you going to share that picture with our audience too?
Yes, I am.
The picture that I saw had basically it upside down.
That's correct.
Okay, so you had to figure out how to flip the image on your laptop screen. I assume there's a utility that does that so that it's upside down?
Yeah, actually our video drivers had that capability.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. So not even a utility, just works right out of the box that way. I'm curious how you type. Do you have to lie on the counter face up to type an email?
No, actually, we use a software keyboard. Windows actually comes with one under accessories. And so we just bring up a software keyboard on the screen and type using the mouse on that software keyboard.
Oh.
And it works really well.
So touchscreen would really come in handy there, huh?
Yeah. And we got an optical mouse for it, so we have a wireless mouse.
I suppose you could attach an external keyboard too, right?
Certainly, yeah. Our USB ports are accessible. We have, obviously, wireless internet, but we left our wired port accessible as well. If we ever wanted to run a wire in there to it, we could.
Okay.
And we have a CD player or DVD player that allows the CD or DVD to kind of hook on to the sender section so we can put in CDs and DVDs.
Otherwise, it'd be upside down, right?
Wouldn't yeah, stick exactly. In
right. Okay.
And so, yeah, we're in business. We can watch movies on it. We can, obviously, you know, all the websites now. My son's latest is being hooked on the old Star Trek TV series.
Uh-huh.
You can get to that on CBS.com and watch all the old Star Trek shows. So
yeah.
We can watch, you know, television programming or movies or whatever on it. I'm just way psyched about it.
You have all your recipes on there yet?
Yeah. Well, I'm not much of a cook. I'm not a technologist. So maybe we'll try that. That's a concept I'll have to explore.
And good intentions, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Very cool.
So,
all right.
We'll definitely put some pictures to our do-it-yourself project. I was really happy with the way it turned out.
Okay.
And we also had a little bit of Twitter conversation from Jason Schmidt. He was trying out TweetDeck, which is an Adobe Air application for pulling in tweets and kind of organizing them from Twitter. And then he also recommended Prezi.com. I think maybe we've talked about that in a previous show, which is an online presentation tool. So lots of fun stuff going on in Web 2.0 type applications that Jason's sharing with us.
Yep.
Email, Martin, came in from John Simonson.
Mm-hmm.
John is our resident search engine optimization geek, and he was doing a presentation, a Chamber of Commerce presentation, actually, where he was talking to them about websites and about using something he called calls to action. And basically, a call to action is kind of a rhetorical kind of question or whatever. Why join our congregation? Why attend our church? And then linking them to some information to answer those types of questions. So he thought that might be an effective tool to use on our church websites.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously, you know, used in business settings, but.
Yep. I think one of the don'ts when we talked about evangelistic websites a couple shows ago was don't let them leave without knowing or taking a particular action. So you have to really determine what that action is. What's the next step? And I think a lot of our church websites don't really think about that. They're more just informational. It's not this call to action. What do you want them to do, you know, once they're on the site or once they leave the site? So great advice. Thanks, John.
Yeah. The next comment came from Dan Scheffel, who's a parish assistant at St. Paul's in Onalaska, Wisconsin. And I was really excited to read his email. It kind of ties back to a show we did previously, Martin. I think maybe in the don'ts section as well about church websites, where you want to determine your audience and maybe even segment the information that you're preparing for your members on the web versus what you're preparing for your church visitors.
Yep.
And Dan's congregation there in Onalaska has actually set up a members-only website. It's at members.stpaulonalaska.org, and they are doing just that. You have to actually log in to get access to the full site, but if you're interested in taking a look, they're using Drupal,
yep.
The content management system that's becoming more and more popular out on the web, and I think have a really impressive members-only website started up there at Onalaska.
Sure. And Drupal, by the way, is the technology that we're moving to for Wells.net. So I'm learning about Drupal more and more each day. We have an outside consultant doing a lot of the heavy lifting, but we're going to have to obviously take over once they're done with the design. Actually, if you want to see the new, at least a little bit of the new design, we've launched a beta site for the Synod Convention coming up this summer. If you go to beta.wells.net, you can get a little glimpse of Drupal and how we are putting that design together. That's a kind of a low traffic site at this point. We'll be launching in more earnest in July, later in July before the Synod Convention, with a lot more stuff. But at least you can see where we're headed at beta.wells.net. So I'm kind of excited about what Drupal can do. And Dan, I looked at their site, and Dan has really done some nice stuff there.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Pretty powerful.
We did talk briefly about Drupal and our content management system podcast back on episode 47, so we can have a link to that in our show notes. And also, there's a wiki page. So if you're using Drupal, you know, we'd love to have you contribute to the wiki page about Drupal, and we'll have a link to that on the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, speaking of the wiki, I noticed that David Savatsky, our World Missions Promotion Person, has been out on our Wells Tech Wiki adding a new section of presentation tips.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have tips for doing effective presentations, particularly as it relates to the technical aspects of your presentations, we'd love to have you contribute to the pages that David set up out on the Wells Tech Wiki. Bumped him right up the list in our long tail. He's one of those contributors that's done quite a bit of work on the Wells Tech Wiki. So
beautiful. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Keep that coming. And finally, Sally.
Yeah, we heard from Greg Latiku.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Just call him Greg.
There you go. Greg shared a video snippet. I thought this was an awesome way to contribute, and it's actually part of the Wells Tech Wiki now. We've set up a new page in the church media section for video clips, and his congregation developed a He Is Risen little, I think it's only about 10 seconds long, mm-hmm. video clip, and he wanted to share that with other Wells congregations in case they had a need for that type of clip. So if you have video clips that you're developing and would want to share them, we've got a place for it on our Wells Tech Wiki, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I wanted to put that on it seemed like the Wells Tech Wiki was a good place to do that. The only problem with the Wells Tech Wiki is it doesn't allow attachments over 4 meg, I think, 5 meg, and Greg's video was larger than that. So I had to figure out a way to get it on the wiki, at least get it presented on the wiki and attached someplace. So I thought, we could put, you know, we got an FTP server over at Wells.net, but I didn't really want to carve out a section just for Wells Tech over there. So what I did was I created a Dropio, Drop.io, Dropbox, as it were, called drop.io/WellsTech, and then uploaded Greg's video there and then linked to it on the Wells Tech Wiki. So really Web 2.0'd it, I guess is the way you'd say it. Using free tools, Dropio will allow up to 100 megs. So I threw it over there, created a link to it, and now everybody can gain access to that. So if you want to head over to Dropio/WellsTech, you can kind of see all the there's only one file there now, but we'll make that available to people who want to upload stuff as well for us rather than sending it in an attachment.
Okay, so that makes my geek blood excited to hear how Web 2.0, you know, can solve your problems like that. There's always a solution out there.
That's right, and usually free.
Yeah, that's my favorite price.
Okay. So keep the feedback coming, everybody. Go to wellstech.wells.net, and you can click on a you can add a comment. You can find out all the different ways you can contribute to the show. Maybe Greg could call into our voicemail line and tell us how to pronounce his last name even. That would be great.
All right.
All righty. Up next week, we are going to be joined again by our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potras from New London, Wisconsin, Ed Emanuel up there. And we're going to be talking about planning for summer learning. This is not just for teachers, but I think for pastors, for lay people, for whoever. I think summer is a great time to think about, you know, using that time. Sometimes that's a downtime, vacation time, whatever, slower time. Just figuring out what is what you want to focus on, whether it's classroom technology or presentation technology, or you want to beef up your audio and video system in your sanctuary, whatever it is. Summer is a great time for doing that. Last time that Gail joined us, we talked about PLNs. Personal learning networks, and they would obviously play a part in your summer learning setup. So tune in next week. And as I mentioned before, we'll also play part two of the Mike Wessendorf interview. Well, Sally, I think we've exhausted ourselves and probably the patience of our listeners once again. We're going to be over an hour. We try, Sally, don't we? We try so hard to keep this under an hour, but I don't know what it is. We get so much feedback, and we get excited about different concepts like wikis that we want to share, and hopefully our listeners stick with us.
Yeah, there's just so much good tech talk to have these days.
Yep. And we don't want to go to more than once a week shows. That would kill me. Probably you as well. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Let's close the show very fittingly with a song from Mike Wessendorf, his song Prelude to Praise from his new album, Color Through the Gray. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Fulfilled, for his grace beyond all measure, for Jesus' sacrifice, the payment for my sin, for my life paid the price, that I might learn to sing praises to my God and King. That we sing praises to his holy name. Cry, worthy is your name on high, that we consider your great love, alleluia. Ha, alleluia. Sing to the people, tell of the wondrous story, how a man that's bent and broken can stand before the King, be called a faithful servant, that's gotta make you sing praises to my God and King. That we sing praises to his holy name. That we cry, worthy is your name on high, that we consider your great love, alleluia. Ha, alleluia. Da 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 wondrous story. How a man that's bent and broken can stand before the King. Be called a faithful servant. That's gotta make you sing praises to my God and King. That we sing praises to his holy name. That we cry, worthy is your name on high. That we consider your great love. Alleluia.